Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Life Podcast from Pacific Life Insurance Company. I'm Stephen Mitchell, one of your co-hosts, and I'm joined today by my good friend, Bill Bell. Say hello to everyone, Bill.
Hello to everyone, Bill.
Very nicely done. Bill's following his script, as he always should. Today, we have a very special guest that's joined us for our podcast, Christina He, who many of you have probably seen if you've come to Pacific Life meetings in the past. She works in our corporate financial area and is one of our bond trading general account investment experts. Christina actually was trained in her home country of China and actually has a PhD. Is that correct, Bill?
Yeah, she fooled me because she's Dr. Christina He, and I asked her to check out my foot problem that I have, and she wasn't able to do so.
Didn't help, but she gave you some advice on that adjustable rate mortgage that you got on your house, right?
I have a fixed rate mortgage at 2.99%. I'm sitting pretty right there.
Okay. Anyway, Christina was invited to speak to our Total Solution Forum audience. For some of you that were with us on our last episode, our Total Solution Forum took place recently in Huntington Beach, California. And Christina spoke to the group about interest rates and inflation and all those sort of timely topics that were just starting to really become a big deal. And so we grabbed Christina, invited her over to our booth at the Total Solution Forum and had a conversation where we followed up on some of the material that she covered in her general session. So let's go to that interview that Bill and I had with Christina at the Total Solution Forum.
Oh, wait a minute, guys. But first, the disclosures.
All right.
This podcast is intended for financial professional use only. If you are not a financial professional, please visit our public website at pacificlife.com. Although this podcast is sponsored by Pacific Life Insurance Company, the opinions and views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not necessarily reflect Pacific Life Insurance Company's views on any of the topics discussed. Pacific Life Insurance Company is licensed to issue insurance products in all states except New York. Product and material availability and features may vary by state. And stay tuned after this episode for more important disclosures at the end of this podcast. Okay, back to the interview.
Okay, Christina.
Yes.
Welcome to the Life Podcast.
Thank you.
Are you a faithful subscriber to our podcast yet?
Never heard of it.
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah. We're going to cut that question. Oh, yeah, yeah.
No,
yeah,
keep it.
Yeah, we're going to well, we're actually really delighted to have you here today. Now, Bill was really excited you were going to be here today because you are a doctor, and Bill has this problem with his foot, and he was hoping that... But she's got a PhD, Bill.
Not only that, it's a PhD in math, so probably not the most practical subject.
Well, you might be able to triangulate the proper angle that I need to be walking at to help out my foot problem here. So
anyway, Christina, you are here today to speak to the Total Solution Forum and give your economic perspective. So share with our listeners what you do for Pacific Life.
My title is Deputy Chief Investment Officer, responsible for overall investment strategy. So I do have a pretty good view of the entire general account, and we do asset allocations and asset portfolio reviews, performance tracking, and stuff like that.
So you're managing a very large portfolio, or helping to manage a very...
Yes.
I mean, a guy like Bill, he's got millions and millions of dollars that he's managing in his own personal account. How much money are you managing?
Overall, our general account is about, on the asset we manage, is about $100
billion. $100 billion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in terms of our peer companies, how does that rank in the life insurance world?
We have been growing so fast. So actually, our rank has been increasing a lot. For the longest time, we have been doing peer analysis, so we know everybody, you know, what their size are and stuff. When we started this about 10 years ago, we were at like a bottom quantile. Now, we're top league pretty much. Probably only 4, 5, 6 companies are higher than us. So we've been catching up very well.
Yeah, and so I think we could probably thank our listeners for all that life insurance and annuity products that they've been selling, because that's what you do, right? When the premiums come in on those products, we have to invest them.
Exactly. And I do have to emphasize, our portfolio have been all growing from organic businesses. We did not do any acquisition. And so all the growth are coming from the product sales, whether it's life insurance or annuities. So thank you all. You have all having contributed so much to our growth.
So, Christina, most of our listeners are producers and financial professionals. They hear you say that our general account is about 100 billion, and that is billion with a B. So just to clarify, but they probably are not aware of what that 100 billion is comprised of. So could you give everybody a little snapshot as to what we invest that money in?
Okay, sure. Roughly speaking, 75% of our assets is invested in bonds, and 20% is in mortgage loans, and then a sliver of that is in alternatives, which is mostly private equity and real estate equities. And this composition is not that unique based on our regulatory environment, the requirements there. So most of the insurance companies, most of the assets are invested in fixed income type, not in equity type.
It's really not, like you say, it's not a choice that we have. Like, we couldn't go out and have 90% of our portfolio in stocks, right? We would get shut down.
No, regulators, remember, their top priority is to protect the policyholders, which means they don't want investment portfolios of a life insurer be that volatile. So they want to make sure the insurance companies are solvent and be there for a long time to pay our policyholders when they need to.
So let's start with the biggest slice then. So about 75% of our portfolio is bonds. Mm-hmm. Now, we obviously know that ever since Bill was born, interest rates have been going down, 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 down. And your entire professional career probably, interest rates down, down, down. We all know that suddenly this has changed. So let's talk a little bit about, and this was obviously a focus of the discussion with the group today, what has happened to turn that around from your perspective, and what can we expect over the next, as far as you feel comfortable looking into the future, what can we expect in interest rates over the next year or so?
Yeah, Steve, it is almost a paradigm shift. As a fixed income investor, remember, 95% of our assets are in fixed income. I would say we have been in this depressed mode for the last 10, 15 years. Think about when you have to lend somebody money for 10 years and earn 2.5%. Boy, that's hard. So the shift that happened in 2022 really made us smile. We haven't seen such opportunities almost in a generation. And we do believe that's an opportunity.
I saw Todd Nasser actually smile once, and that's a real rarity.
That's my boss.
and former guest on the Life Podcast. So.
And for us, what's happened is two things to push up the yields. And one is the treasury rates, what we call the risk-free rates, are going up as the Fed is raising rates to fight inflation. And the second component for the bond yield is the credit spread. And the credit spread has also been widening, you know, in anticipation of a weakening outlook for the economy. We believe at the current level, those increased in credit spread more than compensated for what we deemed increased risk in the economy.
Another piece of that pie is alternative assets. And now I think that you're seeing that become a bigger part of a lot of insurance companies' story in regards to where they're investing their money. I think that even at Pacific Life, it's a little bigger part of our percentage of our portfolio than it was in the past. What are these alternative assets and how do they help to supplement the fixed component of the general account portfolio?
Good question. You're right, Bill, that we have been gradually increase our allocation to the alternatives. For us, we don't play in the public market more like we play in the private market. So private equities, infrastructure equities, and real estate equities are three components in our alternative portfolio. And right now, they're about 4% of the total, and it's going to gradually increase on the absolute dollar amount. We actually want to double that in 5 years, and in all three sleeves. We think the private equities and all of this has more benefits. They are capital intense in terms of the risk-based capitals, but I think our investment team, internal investing team, has a really long history managing that. And we see good opportunities right now. And our beta, that is our volatility, is much less than the public market. So we feel pretty comfortable to increase that. And right now, how it benefits to our product portfolio is we're using a small portion of that to back our long duration liabilities.
So let's talk about the third piece, the commercial mortgage piece. Now, when COVID hit, you know, our building that Bill and I work in was full of employees. When we've gone back to work now, we could probably shut down most of the floors on our building and just use maybe the top floor. Now, we own our building. It's not a big deal. But I've always wondered, why haven't we seen just a complete meltdown of the commercial mortgage world? Because you think that that's got to be happening across the board, all these mortgages of businesses and office space. How are we not feeling the pain from all those vacancies now? Mm.
Good question. The office sector is a big question mark as to how eventually it's going to end. I think it is likely the footprint of the companies will shrink. You're right, using our own company as an example, that we probably don't need any square feet going forward. Part of the reason that we have not seen the meltdown is most of the leases are but longer term. So they're not up for renewal yet. So probably the question is, when the leases, a lot of companies don't own the buildings like us, right? But when the leases are up for renewal, that will be a big concern. So that's one. And the two is actually, if you are hearing the news, even though Pacific Life has a pretty flexible schedule and we support people who want to go remote, a lot of companies actually want to turn that tide around. You are hearing companies are mandating at least 3 days in the office. Even Goldman Sachs is 5 days in the office. You know, we heard some of our peers actually are mandating that. So how the company is going to really handle this new world is a question mark too. We may see maybe it's not as bad as we thought. So that's second. So yet to play out. For us, given this uncertainties, we are more cautious in the office sector, in our commercial mortgage loan lending. But our investment strategy in this particular sector has always been to be in the marquee buildings in the marquee city. So I think those A type of building gonna hold much better regardless.
I want to talk a little bit about what you just talked about from the stage, from the economic standpoint. So if I can summarize what I heard from you, and maybe you can confirm this in more words than yes or no, it sounds like the immediate economic future for the U.S. relatively stable, even maybe to the rosy side, but some other parts of the world a little more instability and some more challenges. Is that what I got?
Yes. I think I won't say put rosy. I would say downturn is coming, but we don't expect that severe or long. And we are better off than the rest of the world.
What you spent quite a bit of time in your presentation was that the Fed really wants the economy to slow down a bit, right? Because right now we have no unemployment problem, right?
Exactly.
And you said there's two jobs for every applicant out there. And so we still have, and for the first time in, certainly in Bill's lifetime, not mine, I can remember inflation from the 70s and the early 80s. It's like for the first time now, we have wage inflation.
Exactly.
Where a company like Pacific Life, you know, if we wanted to force people to come back into the building, that might be pretty dangerous because people can work from home and get hired anywhere they want. So talk a little bit about, again, how the Fed's policy. Now, again, today, you know, we're not sure what the Fed did. And of course, by the time this podcast comes
75
bips. Okay. So who knows, by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be even higher. We don't know. But talk a little bit about where you think Again, the Fed is trying to fight inflation, but they don't want a recession. They don't want a meltdown. How is the Fed going to, in your view, how are they going to balance that out?
Yeah, that's the soft landing they're trying to achieve. I would say it probably is getting more and more difficult how persistent the inflation is. So actually, the Fed Chairman Powell has said very clearly that their top concern right now is to fight inflation, and the pain to economy may be inevitable. So which means they're prepared for a recession. Of course, they don't want to send the economy in a tailspin, and I don't think they will. But seems like some kind of the shadow recession may be warranted in 2023. Again, I do not think this is a great financial crisis type of thing.
And then you mentioned real estate in the housing market. It didn't seem like you were overly concerned about a 2007-2008 style crash in the housing market. Why is that? I mean, mortgage rates are now well over 6% for a 30-year fixed. I know that on my street, there's three houses for sale where that was not the case even just a few months ago. Do you think that we'll maybe see a downturn in real estate prices, but not a full-out crash? What's your prediction there?
You're right. We do not believe that they're going to have a housing market crash for a few reasons. One is the consumers or household has been pretty responsible in how much debt they take on. Consumers has been pretty healthy. There's still a lot of excess savings in the bank. And also, you know, the home price going up actually have greatly benefited existing homeowners, because a lot of us are sitting on still very healthy home equities, have not been tapped. And two is the mortgage rate going up may be bad for the new home sales, but for the existing homeowners, most of the debt is on the fixed rate. For example, me personally, my mortgage rate is at 2.75%, and I locked in for a long time, so I don't have to worry about that.
2.99 for me, so I'm close,
exactly.
But yes.
Yeah. Exactly. So
for those of you that couldn't hear, Stephen just sheepishly said 3.5 for him.
So that's why it's servicing that kind of a debt is not a big problem. And thirdly, is the banks have been pretty responsible in what kind of commercial loans they make. We are not seeing much those zero down, zero document type of loans in the last 10 years. So overall, I would say fundamentally, the home price, yes, it may go up or stop rising, but overall, we're not seeing people going to default. We're not predicting a wave of foreclosures going to come.
All right, well, that's good news for those of us in Southern California, because obviously for us, a huge part of our net worth in many cases is the equity in our homes.
Exactly.
And it's part of our retirement plan in a lot of cases.
Yep.
So that's great news all around.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit more about interest rates. I mean, obviously for the producers that sell our products, they're optimistic and happy that interest rates are going up.
Me too.
We haven't been able to raise the interest rates and the cap rates on our index products quite as quickly as we'd like to. Can you explain what's happening there and why we can't do that?
No, so that's a concept of a new money yield versus a portfolio yield, right? We talked about our asset portfolio, which is $100 billion. So in order to turn the aircraft carrier like that, it's going to take time. So it's going to take multiple years of a 5% or higher to drag up our portfolio yield, which is how we priced our cap and whatnot. So that's one. And just think about our asset duration is about 7 years or 10-year average life, if you will. So you can think about that's a long portfolio for us to get reinvested. The other one is the interesting dynamic between the short-term rates and the long-term rates. And as we all know, the curves are inverted right now, which is not good for us in a way that buying the options for those caps. option cost usually is key off 1 year rate. So the higher the 1 year rate is, the higher the option cost for us is. So that's another reason that we cannot raise our cap rate that fast. But the good news is, again, the new money yield is higher. So eventually we're going to benefit for our portfolio yield, and it's going to benefit for the products that's all priced off the new money yield.
You know, I've got a great idea for some additional yield within our portfolio. So
let's hear about it.
Well, you know, Stephen and I's favorite baseball team, the Los Angeles Angels, is currently for sale. And we could just take a small percentage of that $100 billion. You're laughing, but we're serious. I mean, Pacific Life Park. I mean, what a better.
Oh, I know. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. What?
And we have to make a decision here. Is it safety or consistency matter more, or
You know, she's being too logical here, Stephen.
I think I heard that we have a commitment that they're at least going to research.
Oh, that's funny. By the way, we actually do invest in stadiums. We lend money to the football league, and we lend money to like a Manchester soccer team. But as equity investor, I think we need to be a little more cautious. Again, we don't play with our policyholder money.
Just keep in mind, though, that the current owner of the Angels bought the team for about $150 million, and is going to sell the team for about $2.5 billion. So that's a pretty good return on investment there.
Wow.
All right. Well, Christina, we're going to let you go because we know that you've got a lot of work to do to keep our $100 billion safe and for our policyholders.
Work for our policyholders.
That's exactly right. But Thank you so much for joining us here today. And we're going to have you on again soon. So
is that the threat?
It's a promise. And we're going to make sure that you're subscribed to the Life Podcast. So thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Well, we hope that you enjoyed that conversation with Christina. Although I think, you know, on second listening, Bill, I mean, she really, you know, wasn't terribly impressed with that suggestion that you had at the end there. Are you kind of feeling a little pain from that?
Some people, they just don't see the big picture. obviously, Christina is smarter than I could ever hope to imagine for myself. So I guess we're going to have to... We're going to have to respect her expertise on that particular matter. But all I have to say is the guy that's selling the Angels now is going to probably get about a 20x return on his investment. Maybe Pacific Life is not going to be in the baseball business going forward, but somebody will be and will probably make a sizable amount of money in the future.
Well, hopefully we're going to be in business long enough to give all of our listeners another podcast in the future. So we'd like to thank you for tuning into this particular podcast and ask you to join us on an upcoming podcast. For those of you that would like to catch some of our past episodes, listen to them again, share them with family and friends, what's the easiest way for them to do that, Bill?
Well, first of all, as always, I'd like to remind people that if you have a question for myself or Stephen, you can drop us an email at themailbag@pacificlife.com. That's a special inbox that goes directly to Stephen and I. And in fact, we are going to be doing a mailbag episode of the show here at sometime in 2023. So if you give us an intriguing question, we might even be able to read it and answer it, quote unquote, live on a future episode of the podcast. And then, of course, if somebody wants to listen to past episodes of the Life Podcast, you can do so on all the streaming apps, but you can also do so by visiting our website at thelifepodcast.com. And then finally, if you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, please stop by, drop us a review. It's always great to see kind words from our listeners. So for Stephen Mitchell, I'm Bill Bell. Thanks for joining us today.
Pacific Life is a product provider. It is not a fiduciary, and therefore it does not give advice or make recommendations regarding insurance or investment products. In order to sell life insurance, a financial professional must be a properly licensed and appointed life insurance producer. Pacific Life Insurance Company is licensed to issue insurance products in all states except New York. Product/material availability and features may vary by state. Policyholder stands for policy owner. BIPS stands for basic point calculator. FP stands for financial professional. Pacific Life Insurance Company's home office is located in Newport Beach, California. This podcast was recorded on September 21st, 2022. The state code for this podcast is 22-287.